Professor Andy Neely, Director of the Cambridge Service Alliance.
Professor Neely, thank you very much indeed for talking to the Alliance podcast series today. You are, of course, Director. The Alliance is part of Cambridge University. We're looking forward to the economy in 2014 and the structural balance between the so-called manufacturing and service sector. How important is that classification in a modern post-recession economy, manufacturing and service sector?
So the classification manufacturing to service is breaking down in many ways. What we're seeing is a significant change in the nature of many manufacturing firms. Increasingly, rather than selling products, they're selling services and solutions that accompany their products. And many manufacturing firms effectively are reinventing themselves as services businesses.
So therefore, if people quote the economic recovery we're going through and talk about the manufacturing sector only being a small percentage of our gross domestic product, it accounts for less than 11% of the economy at the moment, do you think that's a real distinction?
It's a useful historical distinction. It's important, first of all, to think about the size of the manufacturing sector. So actually, it contributes $139 billion to the overall GDP. But the other thing that's happening increasingly is that manufacturing firms are changing the way they operate their business. They're relying much, much more on technology, much, much more on data. That's allowing some real efficiencies to be driven through the sector and also finding new ways of creating value for their customers.
But if we're in a recovery and small businesses are going to do well because shoppers are spending more, there's going to be a bit of a housing boom, if not bubble, how do we know that the manufacturing sector is fit for purpose to pick up on this if it's, as you say, offering services as well as goods?
So I think there's a big challenge for many manufacturing firms, which is exactly understanding where the economy is going and particularly where technology is going. So if you think about the three I's, the world is becoming more instrumented, interconnected and intelligent. That's captured by IBM as the smarter planet. So the idea there is that actually more and more instruments are out there gathering more and more data about the way that we are using products. Increasingly those are connected to the internet, so they're becoming more interconnected. And those connections allow us to gather data and make more intelligent or smarter decisions. So one of the challenges facing manufacturing firms as they think about the future is how do we build the skills, how do we build the capability to really take advantage of that data and to create services that support or enhance our products and are therefore of greater value to customers.
So do you think the current analysis that we read about is any longer valid? Because people are talking about rebalancing the economy between the north and south of the UK, house prices in the south compared to the north. They talk about perhaps we won't be able to capture the markets of Brazil, Russia, India, China, the so-called BRICS. There's a lot of confusion regarding where the economy is going and what traders or businesses should do to get maximum value out of that.
I think there is. I think there's a lot of confusion about what rebalancing the economy means. So some people talk about it in the sense of rebalancing away from services, but in brackets they mean away from financial services. And there was a sense that we got too dependent on financial services for a while. Others talk about balancing north and south of the country. So I think you have to be really careful about the language that we mean and the way that we use the phrase rebalancing the economy.
You deal with, in the Cambridge Services Alliance, global companies such as Caterpillar, Pearson's, BAE Systems, IBM. But when you talk to manufacturing companies who are working globally, what do you sense their mood is?
I think generally it's a difficult time, but they're also optimistic about the future.
How will people respond in terms of their own skill set to these new challenges?
Yes, so I think it'll certainly lead to jobs and growth. One of the interesting questions is how do you take that support capability that you might develop in the UK and then export it to overseas markets? So a number of organisations that we work with in the Service Alliance are thinking about setting up, or have in some cases set up, support bases overseas where they will provide support to local firms or local governments in using the assets, using the equipment that they've bought traditionally.
What would those support services consist of? Business skills, business advice, consultancy?
Oh no, it's much more about how to maximise or optimise the use of the assets. So if you take Caterpillar is an example. Caterpillar is using technology to remotely monitor the health of their assets. They're using that technology to help the customers maximize the viability of those assets, the long-term life of those assets. They're using it to make predictions about when things need to be maintained and serviced and when they can keep operating. Those capabilities are valuable across the world. And ultimately, it's about how do I, as a manufacturer, help my customers, or indeed my customers' customers, operate their businesses as efficiently and effectively as possible so they can be successful.
Well, then how do you capture the value for the UK economy? If you're David Cameron, he's been to China, off to India, Vince Cable, the business secretary, it's Export Week, he's in Russia. David Cameron's going to give a speech about needing to meet our $1 trillion export target. If the world is global and if these companies you work with are globalised, clearly the UK wants to capture that value for its own economy. Is there a conflict there?
I don't think there's a conflict. I think as the economy develops around the world, you end up with transfer of technology, transfer of knowledge, transfer of skills. So we see people from the UK going and working in these different locations around the world. We see them then helping train people locally and potentially coming back to the UK at a later stage. The real challenge, I think, is thinking when we talk about exports and when we talk about markets overseas, it's thinking beyond the traditional narrow view of the product and saying, actually, what else can we do that supports this product, that allows it to be most effective in the environment in which it's operating? So that's partly asset management services, it's partly training and education services, increasingly products based on electronics, so the software updates that people are providing through the life of the asset. It's all of those things that surround the product. That's where the value lies.
And is that what you mean by servitization of manufacturing? Can you give us some examples of it where it's been successful?
So absolutely, servitization of manufacturing is really this tendency for manufacturing firms to reinvent themselves as service businesses and start to add services to their products. Real example of that, if you take someone like Pearson, you know, Pearson's an education company, traditionally thought of as a book publishing company, but actually over 55% of Pearson's revenue now comes not from products, not from books, but actually comes from education services, so development and delivery of online learning materials, testing materials. Pearson are now running schools in some countries. It's a radically different business from the traditional publishing business.
Professor Andy Neely, Director of the Cambridge Service Alliance, thank you very much for talking to the Alliance podcast series today, part of Cambridge University. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you.